Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-1472, Eastern Niagara Public Power Alliance and Public Power Coalition and their respective individual members, petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Ms. Elefant for the petitioners, Mr. Kennedy for the respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Your Honors, this is a case about FERC issuing a 50-year license without any operational changes based entirely on a settlement agreement without considering the adverse impacts of that agreement, and in fact, by barring parties from even challenging those agreements by claiming that it was outside the scope of FERC's jurisdiction. We contend that that violates the public interest. Today I'm going to address four specific issues that we raised in our brief. First, did FERC violate its own policy by issuing a 50-year license in a situation where the project does not propose any operational changes and where the mitigation is not extensive? Second, did FERC err in evading review of the NIPA so-called offside settlement agreements, which were part of the settlement package, which FERC actually looked at in the environmental impact statement, that's in the joint appendix at 322 and 324, and which adversely impacted my clients, the Public Power Coalition and the Eastern Niagara Coalition? Third, did FERC err in ignoring the adverse impacts of erosion on my clients who are situated within 15 miles of the project and the operation of which directly impacts the shorelines of these communities? And fourth, did FERC undervalue the power produced by this project and its net benefits by using average power rates rather than peaking rates in assessing the value of project power from a peaking facility? Unless your honors have specific questions, I'll give a brief overview of the facts. This case arises out of what's known as the alternative license proceeding that NIPA invoked to relicense its project. The proceeding was started in 2002, and essentially how the alternative proceeding works is the licensee sends out notice and gathers up so-called stakeholders, gets them together, and basically the parties arrive at a settlement agreement before the application is filed at FERC. They identify the impacts that are going to be reviewed, but this is all done before the application is filed. As we said in our brief, once the application is filed, and in this case, once NIPA filed its application, essentially the settlements that have been arrived at are a fait accompli.
And in this, were your clients able to participate in this alternative licensing procedure?
Our clients were vaguely aware of the alternative license process. What they weren't aware of were the implications of not participating. None of that was information that was explained. My clients rightly assumed by consulting with FERC rules that the process starts when an application is filed. That's not the end of the proceeding, it's the start of the proceeding. In addition, as you can tell from the joint appendix, pages 3 to 99, these are incredibly extensive and resource-intensive proceedings. There are lists of meetings that went on for days and days on end. I represent very small municipalities who don't have the time and the resources to participate in this type of proceeding and who rely on FERC to protect their interests. And the third issue, I understand Your Honor had a question sort of informationally, but what I did want to point out is FERC also never made an issue of this. FERC did not try to argue that our clients couldn't review these agreements because they hadn't participated. That was an argument that was raised by NIPA in its brief, although I do understand that just as background, it's important information to have.
On the 50-year question, doesn't the statute give FERC the ability to issue licenses for 30 to 50 years?
Yes, Your Honor. The statute, which is attached to FERC's brief, does say FERC can issue a license of not less than 30 years and not more than 50 years.
So how can we second guess its decision when it's explained that it does 50-year licenses in the past, that it's authorized by the statute, that the factors here support 50 years?
Well, Well, first of all, what FERC has done is FERC has taken it upon itself to define that statutory standard. So in some of the cases that we discussed, FERC has said that its policy for issuing licenses within those parameters is 30 years where there's little or no operational changes or extensive mitigation, 50 years where there is extensive mitigation or construction or new operation. And that's a very reasonable approach. What FERC is trying to do in allowing the longer licenses is encourage licensees to undertake more mitigation, but more importantly, give them an opportunity to recover the added cost. So if you have a project, a smaller project that is undertaking significant mitigation, it needs that 50-year period rather than the 30-year period. In this particular case, many of the projects that FERC cited as quote-unquote examples of extensive mitigation, as this court knows, FERC said that the $58 million here, that's the net present value, FERC said that that constituted extensive mitigation. Unfortunately, it didn't really give any examples of why it was extensive, except that the agency said that it was. Many of the cases that FERC had, that FERC cited in its brief at page 51 to 52, those cases, in three of the cases, one had $6 million a year in mitigation, two others had $5 million. This project, and I do want to correct myself here, this project offers $4.49 million in mitigation. We had used the number $3 million, which was based on the staff alternative, and that's incorrect. It's FERC properly used the $4.49 million, which is from the composite number. And so that is the accurate number, and I wanted to correct that. But even so, it doesn't change the argument, because the $4.49 million is still less than the mitigation offered at these other projects. And the other point FERC didn't mention with respect to those projects is they're far smaller. One of them was in the PG&E case, it was a 366-megawatt project that had to implement all kinds of fish passages. One of the projects, the St. Lawrence project, offered $6 million a year, but that was a 921-megawatt project. This project is three times the size of that project. Now, the second distinguishing criteria of the cases that FERC mentioned, and also the NIPA in footnote 20 of its brief gave examples of other 50-year licenses. The other distinction between those cases is in those cases, you had a quid pro quo settlement agreement. If you take a look at all of those cases, as we mentioned in page 51 of our reply brief, if you look at those cases, the FERC points out that it says in some of the cases that the mitigation was extensive, but also it drops a footnote saying that none of the parties objected to this settlement agreement, or the parties have no objection to the 50-year agreement. Or in one of the cases, that was the, PG&E case, in the PG&E case, that's 111 FERC at 62926, FERC had said that the 50 years was actually given as consideration for the settlement. Now, in this case, FERC says the 50 years is extensive mitigation only. So why is it relying on cases that offered more extensive mitigation and also, in addition, had a quid pro quo? Is FERC saying that the quid pro quo justifies the 50 years? Is it saying that it's extensive mitigation? We understand that the statute gives FERC the authority to go as high as 50 years, but FERC has set forth a policy that parties rely on. And if under FERC's policy, this fits within the 30-year period, that's the one that it should abide by.
Can I ask you a question about the off-license agreements?
Yes,
Your Honor. Just explain how they are part of this case from your perspective?
Well, first of all, there were several offside license agreements. There was an offer of settlement that was made and filed by NIPA concomitantly at the same time that it filed its license application. And the first offer of his settlement contained four agreements, one with the host communities, one with some of the environmental groups, one with the tribes, and then there were two others, one with the City of Buffalo and one with Niagara University. So those were filed as part of the agreement, and in its filing, NIPA says in its filing that these agreements are the culmination of the ALP process, and we are presenting these to FERC as part of our package and as part of what we're presenting in this relicense application. So that's one of the first nexuses, is that it's submitted by NYPA, and NYPA is saying that this is the culmination of the process. NYPA also says to FERC in the filings that this is what we've negotiated, and if we don't get FERC approval, all of this falls through the cracks. So that's something that FERC was aware of. It was made aware of on the record in this process. And having been made aware that there's a settlement agreement that's riding on FERC's approval, it's also something that comes into account in, you know, within the scope of the proceeding. The third place that these agreements come into effect, and this is very confusing, is the commission says on one hand they're offsite agreements, but then on the other hand, FERC goes and looks at the, and in the environmental impact statement, it actually looks at, it makes mention of the settlement agreement. This is in the joint appendix at page 324, FERC says, these side agreement proposals would have cumulative socioeconomic benefits for the communities adjacent to or near the projects. And also on page 322, the environmental impact statement says, although these measures do not address a project effect and are not intended to be included in the license, they're connected to relicensing. So FERC itself says that these agreements are connected to relicensing. It sort of looks at them, but it doesn't examine the adverse impacts to my clients. And then to make matters worse, it tells my clients that it doesn't have jurisdiction to do that. So this to me seems like the very essence of arbitrary and capricious decision making, to look at these so-called offsite agreements, kind of take them into account on a nudge-nudge, wink-wink basis.
What's your concern about those agreements?
Well, the agreements with the host communities provide $89 million in net present value to four communities near where the project is situated. So the money is channeled into the region. It gives those projects it gives those communities, the ones in Niagara County, a competitive advantage.
Is that illegal, though?
Excuse me?
Was it illegal to reach those settlement agreements with certain communities and not others?
Well, I don't think that it was illegal, but I think that it violated the public interest for the commission to not consider the effect of those settlements when they were tied part and parcel to this decision and when they had an effect. And the other problem with the settlement agreement is that, again, they sort of predetermined the proceeding. So I have clients who are impacted by, you know, by this project and the impact that erosion is having on their community, on sedimentation and flooding, and those impacts really weren't addressed because the whole proceeding was framed around these prepackaged settlement agreements. The other impact, of course, is that also my clients are adversely impacted by the socioeconomic effects of this project on the region. FERC itself examine the socioeconomics of the project in the part they considered the FMY report. There's a portion of that that's attached to our reply brief. And that report talks about how this project has adverse socioeconomic effects on the community by lowering the tax base within Niagara County, and also by, because of the way the Niagara Act is set up, project is allocated outside of the region. And so many of the projects that are bearing the brunt of operation don't get the benefit of the cheap power. So those are impacts that FERC should have considered, and those impacts are exacerbated by channeling funds into certain select communities and not giving it to others. Those are things that at least FERC should have considered in this licensing process, because it's something that adversely impacts my clients, and that's, you know, one of the portions of relief that we'd like to seek. The other issue that I can
just to follow up on that.
Yeah, sure.
When you say portions of relief we seek, exactly how would the relief go to those agreements?
Well, essentially, the relief that we've asked for in this case is, first of all, for FERC to, for the order to be vacated, to remand to FERC, and for FERC to issue a 30-year license, which we think is appropriate in this
particular
case.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah. And then with respect to the agreements, we'd like to see FERC examine, do a hard study of, you know, evaluating the socioeconomic impacts of the project on my clients, evaluating the impact that the settlement agreements have on the community, and seeing if these agreements are really and truly in the public interest.
But if they weren't, if they're not in the public interest, then it denies the license? I'm trying to get.
Well, yes. If we what FERC has done here is it set those agreements aside. It hasn't looked at them at all. But yes, FERC would evaluate the agreements and evaluate the impacts of the agreements on my clients. And also, you know, what we've asked for too is for FERC just first of all to evaluate just. plain, with the agreements or without, evaluate the socioeconomic and environmental impacts of this project on my client. So that's sort of the first part of it. And we feel that if they were to do that, they would find that it would be appropriate to order mitigation. But the second part of that is, you know, let's not close our eyes to this agreement, which is supposedly outside FERC's jurisdiction. That needs to be evaluated also. Let's look at how that agreement, how this $89 million agreement affects the PPC communities and the EMPPA communities, and if we find that it has an adverse impact, well, maybe we get rid of the settlement agreement, or maybe we craft some other relief to minimize the adverse effects of that agreement. And that would be something that FERC would examine in the context of a remand of the case. The other issue, of course, that I've mentioned is that with regard to the erosion, FERC just... It seems as if its decision there is arbitrary and capricious. It says on the one hand that areas that are under 1.5 foot of water are considered to be in a high erosion area, but then in a previous sentence it says that 1.5 feet isn't really significant. And because these are, again, impacts that affect my clients, it's something that we would like to have a closer look at. I see that my time has expired. Are there any further questions?
May it please the court. I'm Robert Kennedy on behalf of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. One of the threshold issues raised by the petitioner's challenge to the Niagara license is whether or not the supposed competitive injury inflicted by these off-license settlement agreements is sufficient to establish standing such that they can pursue their claim that FERC violated the Federal Power Act by failing to consider those agreements.
It certainly has standing to challenge some of what's going on here, correct?
Correct. We do not dispute that they have standing to challenge their claims relating to the operational impacts of the project. But with respect to their separate claim regarding FERC's analysis or refusal to take these off-license settlement agreements into account in its licensing analysis, we submit that the competitive injury they've alleged is insufficient to establish standing. With respect, both in terms of constitutional standing and prudentially.
Are they really challenging the off-license agreements, or are they just saying that they should have been part of the overall mix of considerations that FERC took into account?
I do not understand their claim to challenge the agreements themselves, but right. What they are saying is, as I understand it, that the Commission violated the Federal Power Act by refusing to bring those agreements into their overall licensing analysis.
They're basically saying that's a relevant factor the Commission should have considered, and you're saying it's not a relevant factor.
Correct. We're saying it's beyond our jurisdiction to consider, and we submit that the competitive injury that they allege flows from that that claim is insufficient to establish standing. First of all, this court on a number of occasions has limited the doctrine of competitor standing to instances where the petitioner and the party against whom the challenged government action is directed are direct and current competitors, and that's not the case here. When you move beyond the realm of direct competition, making a reasonable inference of injury no longer depends upon simple rules of economics, but you bring into the fold speculation about unfettered choices that third parties may make, and that's particularly the case here. The off-license settlement agreements that they claim this injury flows from simply establish funding mechanisms, so the court will have to speculate about how exactly these funds are going to be used. The court will also have to speculate about how the coalition is going to make use of these funds. They have access to some of the funding mechanisms established by these agreements, and they have, in fact, used them. And the court will also have to speculate about whether it's reasonable to assume that whatever decisions may be made in the future by tourists, residents, or businesses in terms of relocation, whether that's reasonably attributable to these projects that may be constructed in the future, or whether it's part of the inherent differences that exist between these communities. These are not two companies making widgets. These are independent, unique communities that have a myriad of inherent differences between them. And we submit that at the end of the day, the number of speculative leaps that the court has to make to find a reasonable inference of injury is simply too many. And we also submit that the competitive injury raised by the coalition simply does not fall within the zone of interest protected by the Federal Power Act. The courts, this court and the Supreme Court, have indicated that the act is intended to regulate and protect the environmental resources in the region, the recreational resources in the region, and also it's intended to further the nation's interests in a full and comprehensive development of its water resources.
Still having a little trouble figuring this out. They're not challenging those agreements directly. We all agree on that.
Correct.
They're just saying in granting the license or considering the license, FERC should have considered basically what was going on in the various communities.
Correct.
Correct, in terms of environmental effects, economic effects. And one of the things that was going on were was the agreement package that the NYPA had reached with various communities. Why is that a standing issue? I can see on the merits you'd say, well, that's, you know, in the mix of considerations, it all balances out, and we have great discretion here, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not sure how standing kicks in there.
Well, with respect to standing, it's the petitioner's obligation to establish standing for, pardon me, each claim it intends to pursue and each form of relief it intends to seek.
And well, they're saying the license decision was arbitrary and capricious.
Because,
and they clearly have standing to bring that general claim.
Because FERC didn't properly, in their view.
Because FERC didn't do a number of things, and one of them was not consider the effect of these agreements on the various communities.
But I think that's a separate and distinct claim. I mean, the bulk of the claims, the bulk of their complaints is that FERC had evidence before, it didn't weigh it properly, it didn't look at the environmental impacts right, it didn't look at it the way we should. And that's your typical arbitrary and capricious claim. With respect to the off-license side agreements, they're saying that the commission violated the Federal Power Act by refusing to consider those agreements in its public interest analysis. So we would submit that this is, in fact, a separate type of claim and which they need to support in terms of standing separately. But even if they were to overcome that hurdle, we submit that the claim fails on the merits. First of all, I heard petitioners say earlier today that the licensing decision was based entirely on the settlement agreements, that it was a fait accompli when these settlement agreements were submitted to the commission, and that's simply not the case. I mean, from the commission's licensing decision was based on a number of scoping meetings that the commission itself had in the Niagara region. It was based on a draft environmental impact statement, a final environmental impact statement, which themselves were backed by 40-some-odd studies, which incorporated and responded to the comments of 30 parties, and it's on the basis of the entire record that the commission made its licensing decision. In no place in the commission's analysis will you see any reference to the off-license settlement agreements in terms of influencing the analysis. They are mentioned in sort of the background facts section. There's a general description of what each of them is, but in terms of the licensing analysis, they played no role. I mean, this is particularly apparent in the 50-year license issue. There, the commission as the court recognized, the statute grants the commission broad authority in fashioning the proper licensing term, and in doing so, it looks at the extent of the measures required by the license. And here, the license measures imposed by the commission required the power authority to invest roughly $60 million, $58 million in mitigation and enhancement measures. If these off-license settlement agreements had been included, the number would have been close to half a billion dollars, I think. So, and nowhere does the commission say, well, this is an issue, we're not sure how we feel about it, but everybody agrees, so we're not going to analyze it. All the operational impacts of the projects were fully analyzed, and the commission's decisions were based on the record before it and not these off-license settlement agreements. And the decision not to include the off-license settlement agreements we submit is reasonable and compelled by the Federal Power Act itself. It's undisputed that these off-license settlement agreements do not address any operational impact of the project. The commission couldn't compel them, and they can't compel the power authority to enter into these types of agreements because they do not deal with project impacts.
Do you understand the theory to be that the off-license agreements were essentially to get certain communities on board in support of the license application?
I'm sure that's their claim.
Your point is that FERC, that's neither here nor there for FERC. FERC has to look at the
substance as opposed to who's supporting.
Precisely. I cannot agree necessarily that that was the reason that these were just payoffs to bring everyone in the fold. But even if it was, it doesn't matter. The commission's jurisdiction under the licensing provisions of the Federal Power Act extend to the project itself, and that's what the act directs the commission to look at in its licensing analysis. In Section 4E, grants the authority to the commission to license projects, and the act defines project as the physical plant and its operations. Section 10A of the act directs the commission to consider to analyze the project itself and whether it's best adapted to comprehensive development of the nation's water resources and consider the impacts that the project will have on the environmental and recreational resources in the area. And that those same considerations are echoed in Section 15, which is the relicensing provisions. When the Act does direct the Commission to look at the internal operations and the business practices of the applicant, it does so with respect to the operation of the project. In Section 15 of the Federal Power Act, 16 U.S.C. 808, it directs the Commission to consider whether the applicant will operate the project safely, whether the applicant will operate the project reliably, and whether it will do so economically. But it doesn't authorize a wide-ranging inquiry into all the business practices of the applicant. And while the statute does use the term public interest in certain instances, both this court and the Supreme Court in the NAACP versus FERC cases have made clear that that term takes its meaning from this other substantive provisions in the Act. It's not an all-encompassing grant of authority to the commission to right all the wrongs that may be in the public interest, to consider all the impacts. That term takes its meaning from the specific provisions of the Act, and here the Act signals that the commission should look at whether the project will comprehensively develop the nation's water resources and the environmental and recreational impacts that the project may have. And unless there are any further questions from the court, the respondents will rest.
Thank you. Would you like a minute to respond to anything he has said?
I will first of all assume that the court does not have any other questions about standing, and we have briefed the issue in our brief. I don't really have anything to respond to beyond what's in our brief about how FERC had examined the general socioeconomic impacts and direct impacts of the project. The one point that I did want to make, though, is that there are two filings here. There's a settlement agreement that was filed under 602, and there's a license agreement. And under Rule 602, FERC has to act and find that an offer of settlement is also in the public interest. And if you look at the FERC license order, and I don't have the reference to the first page of it, it's not just order issuing license. It's order issuing license and accepting offer of settlement. So FERC has a public interest obligation to look at what was proffered to it. And what was proffered to FERC was essentially what I read as a take it or leave it proposal, which basically says we're not making any operational changes. We want a 50-year license, and if this isn't approved, we're not going to grant any of this other offside or benefits that we promised to other people. If that's going to be part of the FERC process, that needs to be an open process. FERC can't accept that agreement on one hand and then say nobody can challenge it and that it's outside FERC's jurisdiction. It completely taints the FERC process. It's almost like an ex parte communication. I mean, it's almost as if the parties, you know, what if they had entered into settlement agreements kind of completely on the hush-hush, and then somebody called the commissioner and said, hey, commissioner, you know, we've got this agreement here, and, you know, we've agreed to it. Approve our license, or, you know, all this whole thing is going to be scuttled, and you're going to have this big dispute in front of FERC. I mean, I think we all agree that that would be, you know, completely outside of the realm of appropriateness. But this is sort of a next level. It's done in the open. People are coming to FERC and saying, look, this is what we're presenting you with. And one reason why FERC didn't make operational changes is because the agreement basically signaled to FERC that if it was to propose any operational changes, the settlement agreement would be scuttled. And I think that the integrity of the process is tainted if parties can't challenge these agreements that are presented to FERC. Call it off license, call it on license, whatever you call it, it's in front of FERC, and parties that are adversely impacted by it should have the opportunity to challenge it.